On behalf of Cofence and Carahsoft, we would like to welcome you to today's podcast, focused around bridging the gaps of cybersecurity, how high-fidelity threat intelligence can help agencies prioritize and combat phishing, where Cofence's Keith Abarguin and Joseph Gallup, alongside Nikhil Gupta from Carahsoft, discuss how the importance of aligning cybersecurity priorities is even more critical than ever to winning the war against phishing.
I want to talk a little bit about the world trends, right? And that's always a good place to start with any conversation, right? What are some of the things that we're observing today, right? How are the world events today attributing to some of these phishing threats in the landscape? And of course, how does the executive order from President Biden reflect that, right? What are you seeing in your expertise?
Sure. Thank you for that question. One of the things that both Joe and I come to this conversation with is a really strong focus around how best can we take the intelligence that we have. I mean, I've got an intelligence background, as does Joe, and apply that most effectively to the challenges that we see in the world. And, you know, one of my biggest roles as the chief product officer is to take a look at that external environment, look at what's going on in the world, what's going on in technology, what's going on in threat evolution, and how do we stay on top of that, ahead of that. And so, I started here at Cofence in 2018, which was, you know, a little bit before COVID hit, but it wasn't too much long after that we did fall right into COVID. And I think it had a dramatic impact on a lot of things, you know, not just cybersecurity, of course, but, you know, one of the big impacts that we saw in both commercial sector as well as in the public sector is this pivot, strong pivot to the cloud. There was always this sort of effort there that's been going on for quite some time, but the Zoom generation, if you will, really accelerated that. We found ourselves at home. We found ourselves leveraging our own home infrastructures. Traffic profiles were different across the globe. You know, the usage of products that we were seeing at home intersected with the stuff we were doing at work. So that changed the landscape. And I think it changed the nature of not the methods necessarily of our tradecraft per se, but it had a lot to do with the content around threat intelligence. And I know Joe will get into that. But combining all of that, along with the even greater emergence and reliance on social media that we've been seeing, the mis and disinformation that comes through those channels, it's very difficult to understand where truth lies. It all sort of has coalesced into this very dynamic environment that we're in today. One of the things that I think the White House was grappling with when they came out with the executive order was, how do you get your hands around these things? How do we sort of mindfully move from where we are today, where a single incident can knock out a big swath of the East Coast power grid, you know, not to revisit painful times, or pumping stations for natural gas and fuel and all of those things? You know, those types of events are huge needle movers in the economy, huge needle movers for our whole society. And I think part of what the White House was trying to do, and it's been quite a while, it was May of 21, I think, that federal guideline came out. So it is certainly not a new executive order, but they've sent out and they provided a number of principles around where they wanted to place emphasis. And I think we'll dig into that a little bit more as we talk through this. Just as a preview, information sharing, for instance, is one that the administration recognized as really important to stay ahead of all of this dynamicism that we're seeing in the world, and ensuring that we have investments in not only people, because, you know, we're the ones clicking on things, we're the ones carrying groceries in, throwing laundry in, taking Zoom calls, putting, you know, making lunches and the like while we're doing our day-to-day business, that people element of it is really important. And you marry that up with the technical side, the technology, the threat intelligence, and what the threats are able to do and go after. And it creates a really dynamic ecosystem that we're involved in. And I know, Joe, you've seen a lot of this in the evolution of across your career, and, you know, certainly in the past couple of years, and you're seeing that in the threat intelligence that Cofence is dealing with as well.
Yeah, and obviously with us being so focused on fishing, we, you know, fishing is what we do. We're trying to stop fishing, and in order to do that, we're providing the intelligence to stop fishing and the platform for people to investigate and remediate as well. But even with fishing being so focused on the fishing problem itself, we have to be aware of what's going on around, you know, around the world, being aware of the other events in cybersecurity, but in security and international politics and policy in general. And a lot of these events, it's helpful to know how they impact phishing itself. And specifically, and I think in the last session, this series, Keith and Molly talked a bit about Russia, and I won't go into detail on that, but that's, you know, obviously that has unfolded over the last several months. And it's interesting to see how it impacts the phishing landscape. And with events like that, you'll see often that major events like that tend to affect the really high end of the phishing landscape and the really low end of the phishing landscape. The really highly tailored spear phishing emails will take on those events as a sort of theme, as will the really, really low end sort of consumer fraud, 419 scams, things like that. They'll use those events to pull on people's heartstrings and try to scam, you know, everyday consumers. But in, you know, in the middle ground of what's going on with phishing, a lot of times with events like that, you'll see that the threat actors have their way of going about things. They're really highly efficient. They're trying to pump out a lot of volume. They know what works and what doesn't, and they often stick with it even through major events like that. They're just sticking with their same themes, their invoice themes, their you know, fax themes, things like that, voicemail. And so these are the, you know, the kinds of events, obviously, that are the precursors and the drivers behind some of the efforts that the White House is encouraging. And, you know, we see it in the FBI's IC3 report as well. Email fraud continuing to dominate, you know, the financial losses in cybersecurity, BEC up to $43 billion, you know, phishing soaring during the COVID pandemic, ransomware blowing up, and phishing continuing to be a point of initiation for ransomware operations. So all of those worldwide trends, it's really important to look at and apply them specifically to the phishing landscape. And that's what we're trying to do.
Yep. Thank you so much, Joe and Keith, for that. And you bring up some good points, as you mentioned, right? Like the world events affecting, you know, and targeting some of those spear phishing attempts. But at the same time, right, phishing is still gonna, it's been around, and it's only, you know, increasing more and more. And especially with the public sector, I think a lot of the executive order, you know, when it comes to just pushing general security, I think a lot of the requirements and guidelines in there also, you know, talking about information sharing, talking about being able to share in human intelligence and threat intelligence, all of that also does relate to phishing. And I know we'll get into that obviously with time. But one thing to comment on your what you said, Keith, too, is we definitely live in an age of, you know, hearing dogs barking and of course the double mute on Zoom, right? It's definitely the new trend and the new normal that we're seeing a little bit with the Zoom, the forever Zoom. So, but exactly as you guys said, I'm happy that you mentioned those points. So to try to, you know, keep it on topic, obviously going to shift the direction a little bit. Want to talk a little bit about public sector, right? And why public sector? And you know, I think a lot of the executive order, you know, it's tailored towards, you know, for example, civilian and federal government, and just meeting a lot of those requirements. And I think, of course, it pertains to everyone. But why is the public sector in particular, you know, from the statistics that we see, right, the second most targeted, you know, industry and one of the highest proportions of phishing attacks that we're noticing? I'm going to bring this one to you, Joe. What do you think makes the, you know, the public sector such a big target here? What are the challenges that you think that are posed for the public sector in particular?
I think I'll actually pass that over to Keith to start off with.
Maybe if I can kick that off, if I may.
And sure, then, Keith, of course.
I think Joe's got some interesting areas to add to this as well. You know, the public sector is massive. You know, this particular slide happens to talk about DoD specifically, and you know, that is certainly also massive in and of itself. But when you add all of the other agencies, whether it's the DoD or the VA or other, you know, FAA and others that are major organizations within the federal government. And then you add on the critical infrastructure elements that keep everything alive. You bleed into the private sector as well. So, you know, this space is absolutely huge. And one of the things that we see here is, and this is from experience from us dealing with some of our DoD customers, they have begun, and I think it is in part a result of some of the areas of emphasis that the administration has started to push more around training and awareness on behalf of their employees to really recognize phishing and the threat that is coming at them, whether it be phishing or smishing or vishing or what have you, any of the social media exploitation kinds of threats. And it really is broad. You know, it's not just email. We do see attacks on occasion in SMS and in other means, not as much from an industry perspective as you might think, but it is growing. And so this need to form and position the humans in this ecosystem to be able to recognize and respond is something that I think is an important element of the executive orders, but it's also a core tenet of what we do at CoFence. CoFence is all about this ecosystem being, we focus everything we do actually around either contributing to the intelligence that we can glean from the human set of sensors to how we can enrich that and how we can turn that around into something that we can respond in our products with proactively. I think in the public sector, this is exacerbated a little bit, particularly in the DoD, where there's a lot of rotation. You know, you see people that go from one position and then they'll, you know, a few years later, the administration will change and there'll be this giant swath of changes that happen across the government and other people get into positions. And the DoD sort of has that culturally baked in. They do these rotations on various periods. And I think this is an area where Joe can probably chime in better than I can, but as people go from one role to the next, it's almost like you're taking someone from an environment that they're very comfortable with and they're very familiar with the norms of communications and the norms of interactions in that role. And you pick them up and you drop them into a new role where they aren't familiar with those norms. And all of a sudden, they're more vulnerable. I mean, you can think about this even from a primal perspective. You know, you take someone from a city and, you know, São Paulo or something, and you drop them into a rainforest or something like that. And they're like, you know, you can't orient yourself very much the same way. And, you know, it maybe not be that drastic and sort of dramatic effect for that scenario, but, you know, you still end up with a circumstance where the culture that a person exists in creates a set of norms that they're able to recognize when something isn't quite right. Why am I receiving an email from this individual? Why is this email formed this way? And I think those types of sort of cultural environments, the cultural circumstances that the public sector has in it, make it a sort of a juicy opportunity space for threat actors. And Joe, I don't know if that's something that you see in the data that you look at or can comment on that at all.
I think absolutely. I think you've covered it very well. There's the threat actors, no matter who they're attacking, they have an objective in mind. And certainly when they're targeting the public sector, they do have a strategic objective. And often if it's another nation state conducting the threat activity, you know, it'll be an attempt at some sort of, you know, espionage or sabotage in some way or other. But no matter their end objective, the way that they get in with phishing is primarily through assuming that the human is the weakest link, and that our objective is to make the human a critical and actually strong link in the chain. And interacting, and this plays in very closely with the second point in the executive order, that is modernizing the cybersecurity apparatus. And there's a lot of talk about AI and automation, but in reality, the real successful applications of AI or automation in general are ones that take into account the need for human, injecting a human into that automated process at some point, at the critical points. And that's what we try to do. try to make the humans the strong points in the chain, making decisions that only humans can make, and leaving the rest that's more conducive to AI and automation up to those systems.
I think that's a great point, Joe. It's augmenting human intelligence with automation and algorithmically, like through AI, is absolutely in the sweet spot of what we're trying to do as we deliver threat intelligence out to our customers. One of the principles that we have is minimize false positives as the best we can. Make sure that if what we say is bad, if our indicators are hit on something, we say something is bad, that darn it, it is bad. Full stop. So, it's important because it allows people, if you have that confidence in the intelligence and it's got that consistency to it, that it is consistently accurate in that sense, then you can move more quickly. And so we take great pains to add that analytic component, which Joe and his colleagues do so well in the intelligence team that we have. And I think that's important throughout all of the things that, all of cybersecurity's world, the pure reliance on technology, the idea of throwing more technology at this problem, which has traditionally been the approach. And it's an unbalanced approach in the sense that, one, the technology tends to be static. So when you put the technology out there, yes, they have signatures that they can update and so forth. But if you don't have a means for it to be continually refining itself, then that technology alone is really not the solution. It's the combination of rich intelligence that results from the detection capabilities that people and technology have, combined with also human ability to refine that and make sure that it's actionable.
Yeah, and Joe and Keith, thanks for mentioning on that. And then just as you guys said, to speak about that intelligence piece, I know, Cofence in particular, they specialize in this, and I know the platform, when it comes to email security, is not only concerned with the human training aspect, but also that intelligence and that sharing of that intelligence, to make kind of the whole posture around email security just that much better, augmenting maybe the existing secure email gateway, right, that's already in place, just giving you that extra confidence and basically extending and removing all those gaps. Before we get into, because I do want to talk about that intelligence, and actually we do have a good slide for that, did want to obviously bring up really quick the executive guidelines that we saw that all kind of correlate with, the federal cybersecurity guidelines with the executive order, right? So obviously we mentioned the threat information sharing, right? That's definitely a key one. I know you've seen that. And Joe, I know you have some insights on that. We also, obviously, there's modernizing government cybersecurity, which you talked about, Joe, and obviously improving the software supply chain security. So, Joe, any thoughts on the guidelines? And before we get into the intelligence piece of Cofence's platform, any thoughts on, how specifically meeting the guidelines of modernizing cybersecurity, sharing threat intel, improving detection, right?
Yeah.
Some of the ways that Cofence can help with that.
Absolutely. I think that there's a good reason that the White House put removing barriers for info sharing first on the list. It is the goal. It's one of the most important things that we can do. But before you can do that, you have to find and know about something that's worth sharing. And so I think some of the others are kind of precursors in a way to that end goal of being able to improve the information sharing. And I did already mention, a couple of slides back, I think slide 8, about modernizing the federal government cybersecurity. And it's important to not think about modernization as just throwing technology at the problem. Modernizing means, in many cases, getting that perfect balance of human intelligence and human intuition along with the technology. And so I think we've talked about that at good length, but in terms of finding and knowing about something that's worth sharing, I do think slide 10 that goes over improving detection, improving investigation, and improving response is really important to leading into that info sharing. And we think that the goal should be to, in order to be able to share information from a phishing perspective about the threats that are out there, and what we aim to enable our customers to do is to rapidly detect and respond to phishing attacks, which essentially stops phishing. And by rapidly, we mean in minutes or hours at most, not days or weeks. And you can't do that unless you have an efficient process and a platform that's tailored to phishing response. So you start with a human, basically. You make them your strongest link. You start the process off with an employee or a user that, based on their human intuition and training, are able to recognize a potential fish. And they need to be able to easily report that suspected fish with a single click. Basically, you have to make it as simple as possible for the user to get you the basic information that you need to start the analysis, to start understanding what the threat actually is. Then the responding SOC analysts, from an improving investigation perspective, has to have at their disposal a platform that enables them to take that reported suspected fish and conduct the advanced email analysis with all the metadata visible, all the URLs parsed, full email headers just a click away, YARA rule matching, YARA rule writing available on the fly, sandbox integration, clustering of emails that are like each other so that you can investigate clusters at once and not just one-offs, a host of other capabilities that are particular to this very, very specific task that is phishing analysis. And if any of the audience work in malware analysis or have analysts who do, you know that for many, the gold standard in reverse engineering is IDA Pro because it's purpose-built for the task at hand. And we thought the same thing was needed for email analysis. So we built it. And SOAR's security orchestration automation response platform certainly have their place in the process as a general purpose tool for integrating multiple platforms. But if you want to make good on giving your analysts the absolute best opportunity to identify, to investigate true phishing attacks, a purpose-built platform for email analysis is a prerequisite, I think. So in enabling that investigation, you then also in turn enable the response, which is to seamlessly automate the removal of those identified fish. And we think that once a fish is reported by users and confirmed by the analysts, and this is where that perfect balance of human and technology goes, once it's been identified and confirmed by the analysts, then the removal of it and every other fish like it should be as close to automatic as possible. An analyst should be able to pull that email out of other inboxes that they know it has reached, even after it's already arrived. Not just, you know, you have a lot of things in the process. And on this slide, you'll see, you know, SEGs, secure email gateways are there. And you've got other things in the, you know, in the pipeline that are bringing these emails to your doorstep. You've got verifications and controls like SPF and DKIM, DMARC. And those are all good. Secure email gateways have a purpose as well, but it's really important to recognize that none of those stages is foolproof and every mechanism has its blind spots and points of failure. So you have to be able to bring it around and have another purpose-built tool to analyze what the threats that are actually reaching you and to be able to remove them once they've reached you. And that's what we try to do, make all of that as easy as possible and provide a platform and the intelligence needed to be able to do that.
And Joe, thanks for that. So I brought up this slide, obviously, as you mentioned, you know, just to show this little bit of that platform that you talked about. And the platform is purpose-built, right, in terms of, you know, being Cofence is kind of, hey, the secure email gateway is going to stop, you know, majority of emails, but it only takes one, and there are ones that will get in, and it's not foolproof, right? Their emails do get through, right? And once they do get through, what do you do with it, right? How do you train your employees to not click on it, right? To not be phished? How do they understand that, hey, they're not going to be the one that detonates ransomware in the organization, right? So, you know, that's kind of the key point there. And Keith, I know I'm sure you have some thoughts on the threat intelligence on Cofence's platform, right? When it comes to email security, you know, talk to me about the slide a little bit. I mean, obviously, Joe mentioned a lot about the intelligence and being able to respond. Do you have any further thoughts on this as well? And what role does some of this, the Cofence's platform here play into email security and human training in general?
Yeah, I could talk for the remainder of the whole
of course.
session on this topic. it's basically what we do, right? You know, it's, I think one of the things that, you know, Joe alluded to, but I if I could just maybe refine a little bit, is around a term that we use is dwell time. Dwell time is the amount of time between when something traverses a secure email gateway and lands in an inbox thread. That's time starts then. And then the period, the amount of time that it takes for you to recognize that it's there, if you ever do, and to remove it and effectively remove the threat entirely, that period of time, dwell time for the threat. And so it's a combination of detection and response that makes that period of time up. And one of the things that I think is really important about this whole circle is almost every element of it is geared around how to make that time as tight as possible. We're not saying that we'll proactively detect everything that will make it through a secure email gateway. That would be us claiming that technology is the only solution. We live on the fact that humans plus technology is the solution. What we are saying is that we will detect as much as we possibly can proactively. And then the stuff that doesn't get detected proactively, the human recognizes it, reports it, we action it, and then it gets pulled out in as narrow a window as possible. And so as we walk around this circle, I'll actually start with PhishMe, and I'll move pretty quickly around the circle. But PhishMe is the product that we have. And I don't really like talking about products per se, because everybody forgets the name of the product and it's like, okay, well, whatever. But the idea is PhishMe is our training and awareness piece. It allows you to recognize the ecosystem, the environment that you're in. It trains you to detect when something is bad. If you see something bad, you want to be able to say, hey, raise your hand. I see something bad is bad. That's what Reporter does. It is a button in your client, in your email client, that when you see something that's bad, you select it, you hit report, boom, it disappears, goes off into the ether to be analyzed. Where that goes is traditionally to an abuse box. Most companies that have any size to them at all have an area where they gather up these things that people think are suspicious. We usually call them an abuse box. My former company, it was literally called suspicious. You know, it was a suspicious inbox that you'd send it to. You can name it whatever you want. But the point is that you want to get through the emails that all of your employees are reporting as quickly as possible. And that's what Joe was alluding to in, with the analysis and clustering and all of those important technical elements. That's what triage is all about. Once you've identified that something is bad, then you want to action that as fast as possible. So what Vision does is allows you to ask the question of your entire ecosystem, who else got that? Now, one of the things that we know, I think everybody knows, is that every company is different. There is no homogeneous companies. You know, there's no homogenization of corporations. Everyone has unique elements about them. However, there are common things across vast swaths of companies. There's threat actors that distribute threat, you know, that fish across companies, across verticals, within verticals. I mean, there's all sorts of mixing and so forth of attacks. The other piece that Vision does is it takes advantage, if you will, of that fact that there is a lot of commonality among a lot of companies. Triage allows you to action things for yourself. It's something that allows you as a company to recognize the thing coming after you. And Vision allows you to action that. But Vision also allows you to take advantage of this community of intelligence that Joe and his team curate and deliver. So what Vision has is a functionality called auto quarantine, where it consumes indicators from the threat intelligence feed and it actions those immediately. What's interesting about that is about half of the time, the indicator, when it gets delivered to Vision, about half the time it finds threats within Vision already. So there's sort of this, oh, it's already been delivered. We delivered an indicator. Now it's cleaning it up, right? So it's sort of looking back in time and saying, oh, you received this threat. The beauty of it is the other half, which is the most important piece, actually, and something that we spend a lot of time focusing on, which is the pre-positioning of the indicator such that sometime in the future, when that threat hits, it automatically and immediately takes it out. There's no time at all. So that dwell time is non-existent in those circumstances. And the more reporters we have, the more opportunity we have to get data, and the more opportunity that we make that really, really tight. So that window closes for every, you know, additional reporter that we see data from. So it's a very exciting ecosystem. It's very much a shared crowdsourced threat intelligence model that gets better and better and better by the day. And we're adding almost 100,000 people onto this ecosystem every week or so. So it's growing quickly.
Thank you, Keith, for that. Especially, I'm happy that you mentioned the crowdsource aspect there, because exactly right, as we get more and more reports, or being able to just stop that email in its tracks before it even, you know, as you said, dwells longer than 5 seconds, right? That's where we want to get. And Joe, I know you have definitely have some thoughts about that that crowdsource and you know, what are some of the tactics and techniques from the data that you're observing, right? What are some of the things that the threat actors are using today, and are there any ways that we can address them? You know, obviously we talked about some of the ways that COFINS can help you address them more proactively, but even outside of that, right, what are some things that SOC analysts need to be looking for, and what are some of the intelligence feeds that they should be kind of considering when improving this proactive response, removing the dwell time on these emails that Keith is mentioning?
Yeah. The cycle that we just saw on that slide that Keith was going through is obviously very important. It's very close to, you know, the traditional intelligence cycle, essentially, where you're observing, you're bringing in the information, you're analyzing it, you're taking action based on that information, and then, you know, you're applying it and learning from it, and you're trying to collect like new information based on what you already know and have responded to and applied. And it's very important, we think, you know, in phishing in general, to be able to have that cycle operating where the incidents and responses conducted by one organization can become, you know, the reactions of that organization can become the proaction of another organization. So not only are you helping yourself, but then you're also helping others to be able to recognize the fish that are arriving in inboxes, passing everything, you know, all the other controls that you have in place and arriving in the inbox and getting them out. And so once you've got this cycle established, you can start to glean significant insights from your own cycle and from other cycle. And this is what we, you know, we're referring to when we say intelligence. And so some, just for as an example, here are some, you know, some insights that we have been gleaning over the last quarter. And this is something that we regularly look into, just looking at what are the top, you know, malware families that are out there in the phishing landscape and, you know, in general. But for us particularly, what's really important is to compare that to what is actually making its way into inboxes, what's getting past those controls, the secure email gateways, and not getting recognized through other controls. And this is, in order, the top five malware types, loader, information stealer, and you've got the top families also. And you'll see Emotet as at the top. That surprises no one, highest volume in terms of what's actually being pumped out in the phishing threat landscape at large. But the lowest on the list is QuackBot in terms of the overall volume. And that's just the lowest out of the top five. Obviously, there are many other malware families that aren't on this list because they're not in the top five. But of the top five, QuackBot or CackBot or QBot or PinkSlipBot or whatever you want to call it is the lowest on the list. But what we've seen, and you can move to the next slide, is that it actually is the top malware family in terms of what's actually making its way into inboxes, which means that the threat actors who are conducting these campaigns using QuackBot are doing a really good job of getting it past secure email gateways. It's the top family, malware family, reaching email inboxes right now. It's interesting for some other reasons as well. the campaigns delivering QuackBot quickly, you know, figured out how to use the Felina vulnerability, one of the exploits that was published, and reacted really quickly and made use of that to as a delivery mechanism. They were recently identified in concert with a malware campaign, Black Basta malware campaign, which we haven't observed, but that's very interesting because it's, you know, ransomware obviously is a huge threat as well. And phishing continues to be an entry point to start ransomware operations. So the fact that QuackBot has those components and new developments and is also reaching inboxes at such a comparatively high rate is really important to understand. And that's the kind of insights that we're looking for and trying to glean from understanding what's being reported by users is actually reaching inboxes. And those kinds of things are, you know, the most important bits of intelligence that we can look for and that people should be on the lookout for when they are assessing what is being reported to them by their users.
Yeah, and definitely an insight there, Joe, as you mentioned, from, you know, not just looking at, as you said, top malware, how to remove, but also getting insights, as you said, kind of getting that human intelligence. These are some of the insights that will better help all of our users, right? And better help public sector in general, right? That, hey, it's not as distributed, CACBOT, right? But it's reaching and why, and right? And looking at and taking it from that glance is going to help, right? All of our public sector customers and all of our attendees, right? Be able to better address and better be concerned with the ones that are making it through, not necessarily the emotets that everyone hears, you know, the storied guy, you know, the news headlines are because they're sending millions and millions of them every day.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like more information on how Carahsoft or Cofence can assist your organization, please visit www.carahsoft.com or email us at cofence@carahsoft.com. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.